Hello and welcome to All Villa No Filler, a podcast all about Aston Villa, the world's greatest football team. They didn't look particularly great this afternoon, though. They endured a terrible 4-0 loss against Spurs, which really damages our hopes for Champions League football this season. More on that in a second. Plus later, Frankie cooks up yet another of his spicy questions. First things first, Frankie, need I ask you this, but how are you?
I was having a great week until today. It was all going well. I'd just been to Ireland, see the family out there. It was had a fantastic time, great wedding. And I was just swimming through the week thinking, yeah, can't wait for the big game this weekend. We've got Ajax away. Go out there, you know, get the job done, bring something back to Villa Park. And then I thought, Tottenham, this is it now. This is going to be a tasty old clash, ain't it? Yeah. And when we beat them last time, I live in an area that's very much halfway between Arsenal and Tottenham Stadium. So you kind of get a half and half around where I am. And the last time we beat Tottenham, I sort of wore my Villa hoodie around, you know, that evening. I thought, you know, I'll walk around and, you know, see if I can wind up a few people just by, you know, my mere presence, which is quite a common thing that happens, actually, just me being around. Tonight, my doors are barricaded, as like in the Simpsons when Springfield just goes collectively mental, and pitchforks, fire sticks are out, and they're trying to bash down my door. Come on, mate, come out here, like an EastEnders Christmas special or something, where everything's going wrong, and I'm the one who's the victim. And they're all screaming at the door, "Mate, cash, take that, mate, bloody cash!" With their bizarre obsession with Mate Cash. But you know, look, Cashy is a very handsome man. He's a very, very handsome.
Certainly is.
I'm sure there's lots of people who are obsessed with them. Such a pretty man who could be the lead in any boy band. You know, if he was in the X Factor or Britain's Got Talent, lead singer, they'd walk it. They'd walk it. Become the biggest selling band in the world.
Absolutely.
But I try to lighten the mood because that was brutal.
It was not good, was it? I've got this image of a Tottenham supporting Frankie Maguire doppelganger who is currently now walking around London when we beat them at their ground earlier this season. It wasn't pretty viewing. On Mother's Day as well, Frankie, of all sacred hallowed days. I couldn't even look my mum in the eye after watching that. I just said, "Sorry, mum. I hope I'm in a better mood next year, but I just can't be with you right now. I need to be alone with my thoughts in a dark room with Frankie, barricaded into a room together so we can just sit in silence and think like some Quakers or something." It was tough going. And I think as well, I think it comes with the big build-up that a lot of Villa fans gave it. I think I said on the last show that we did together, Frankie, that this was arguably the biggest week of the season with the combination of the Ajax game in midweek and obviously this game on Sunday. And we've talked previously about the effect of European games. You know, will it have an effect on our team when it comes to, you know, playing again on Sunday? And I think, to be honest, that's probably a bit of what we saw today. I think the team did look really lethargic.
I agree.
Yeah. They looked tired, a bit drained. You know, the game in Amsterdam against Ajax, I think, you know, it was a tough game. It was a hard fought draw out there, and it took it out of our players. And then to off the back of that game, then to come in and face Spurs, who not only are a very good side, but also they are our direct challengers really for that top four position. It was an unfortunate, you know, fixture to face, really. You know, they were really up for it. They knew what they had to do. And I think, I don't know, I think maybe it was a tiredness and also a bit of a pressure that we put on ourselves. You might have seen the comment that John McGinn gave at the start of, ahead of the game, where he said, you know, all the players know what a big game it is. It's one of the things where, like, we know how big it is. Maybe it's just not a good idea to perhaps say that. Maybe that put a bit more pressure on their own backs. I don't know. I'm trying to think of reasons why that might be the case.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. It was an interesting approach. Just you mentioned the tiredness. It's also worth remembering, you know, something I think the commentator said today, that this is Villa's 41st game of the season, and Tottenham, their maximum they can play now this season will be 41. So I think it's worth bearing that in mind for the fact that I wonder if the formation we started with today, 5-3-2, a hybrid 3-5-2, but it looked more like a 5-3-2.
Yeah, it did.
I wonder if that new formation we played was a couple of factors. One, Emery has recently seen Villa get destroyed in the first 65 minutes by Newcastle and Chelsea at home, 3-0 down against both of them, end up losing 3-1. And the game just getting away from us, getting overrun. If you look back on the Tottenham game that we won 2-1 a couple of months ago, that first half was a real basketball game. There was no control to it, really. It was incredibly entertaining for neutrals, sort of the opposite to the first half today. And then also on top of that, if it's a basketball game, as it likely could have been, you know, had we gone with our usual formation from the start, the likelihood is that because we've played on Thursday and Tottenham are a lot fresher, if that had been a sort of back and forth battle for 90 minutes, the likelihood is that Tottenham had the energy reserves and the personnel on the bench to come off the bench to change the game and probably win it. So I think I understand why Emery did what he did. I think it was a means to just control the game and try and work with the energy levels and the squad that we've got. I mean, you know, Emery never makes excuses ever, but it is worth just stating as a fact that Villa have got horrendous injury problems, or have had it, terrible injury problems this season. So, you know, following that Thursday to Sunday, you know, tough away day at Ajax, exerted a lot of energy. Then we had this game today. So I think in the first half, the 5-3-2, actually, it threw Tottenham off their game because they would have had a game plan for us. That probably would have been quite similar to what to Chelsea and Newcastle, you know, similar structure. But instead, actually, I think it threw them off. I didn't think they didn't really create any chances at all. It also felt at times that we were going long to try and hit their high line.
Yeah.
And it felt like Watkins was causing Romero some problems, but not really doing anything with it. Van den Ven, I think, by the way, is going to be the world's best defender at some point. I think he's just absolutely, what an amazing signing he's been for Spurs. He was brilliant until he obviously went off. But I just thought that there were actually moments where we could have got a goal in the first half, you know, and they were quite sloppy at times at the back at Tottenham. They did give it to us a bit. It's easy to forget all that now, but it actually kind of worked in the first half. But as Ange Postecoglou said, he said he thought Villa would, energy levels were dropping towards the end of the first half. And second half, it's a bit of a problem because, again, I've seen this floating on Twitter. I'm sorry, I can't remember who wrote it because I want to credit them. But I have seen that we've conceded, I think, the most maybe in the league. That I need to see that fact again. But we've conceded a lot of goals, basically, straight after the first half up to the 60th minute. And that does ring true, actually, when I think about it. And today, it just felt a little bit like Pape Sarr got more into it early on. He was excellent as well, I thought, actually, in the second half at least. And his ball into Maddison was just absolutely brilliant. And that can happen. That can happen. That's fine. Okay? You just got to dust yourself down, get on with it. But unfortunately, my God, Konsa, you know, I love Konsa. I think he's been brilliant for us this season. But I have absolutely no earthly idea what he was doing. And it was such a costly, costly moment.
Yeah.
Give that second goal away. You know, he had enough time on the ball to have watched the entirety of Titanic, all three Lord of the Rings movies.
Yeah. It was bizarre, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I don't know what. And it was sort of that, you know, sometimes there's a borderline between, you know, being too casual and just being cool on the ball. And that is when it veered into being too casual.
Yeah.
And I just don't know what he saw. I did think in the first half there were moments where we were put under pressure by Tottenham's press where we almost made a mistake to give the ball away. And I did actually think a goal like that was going to be conceded today in the second half. But I didn't expect it to be in the way it was, in that Konsa actually had loads of time and just sloppily gave the ball away. So that, I mean, how costly do you think that was, really?
I think that was the defining moment for me. Because I thought, you know, 1-0 down, okay, they score a goal early in the second half. But you always think you've got time then to turn it around, and the last thing you want to do is concede so soon after. Basically, you want to after a goal is conceded or scored, where you just need to just relax, reset, refocus. And unfortunately, that moment deprived us of that. And I think the nature of it as well unsettled the team, because I think, you know, Konsa has been very reliable this season. He's been arguably one of our best players this season. So for him to do something like that, I think like the players around him were perhaps unsettled by his decision-making process. And then it just means that when you're 2-0 down against, as a us for Champions League football this season, you know, that's when I think players start to panic because they know that, well, we have to get at least 2 goals to get a point out of this. And that's when you see things like what happened with John McGinn happen, where, you know, he's trying to get his team going and lead from the front, you know, as a captain should and all the rest of it, show a bit of heart and desire. But he just lost his head, basically. It was a daft challenge. I mean, we can talk about, should it have been a red card? Should it have been a yellow? You know, I think there is arguments to be said on both sides there, but you cannot argue with the fact that it was a completely daft challenge. Mm-hmm. And it was forceful and it was intentional. And yeah, I mean, okay, it wasn't the worst challenge in the world, but you can seriously injure your opponent going in that hard on someone's leg. You can. And so, you know, he did get a straight red. Was the ref influenced by, I mean, obviously where it happened was right by the touchline, so right in front of the Spurs bench. Did that influence the refereeing decision in terms of them standing up and getting involved and all the rest of it? Possibly. But still, you can't do that. You can't do that. And then when he's gone, then that's it, isn't it? You know, 2-0 down without our captain. And then they just took full advantage in the last 2 minutes to score their 2 extra goals. So I would say, Frankie, that this is probably the most disappointing defeat of the season. Definitely. I think the United game at home as well probably rides quite high because of how well we played and still didn't get anything out of it. I think this is kind of the other side of the coin where it's a disappointing loss because of the nature of the defeat. Like, we totally deserve to lose today, and it's very unfortunate that we decided to play like that against a team that we really need to be challenging in terms of getting into the top four. So yeah, bad day at the office. But I do think that Konsa moment, that second goal, that was critical in our downfall. As soon as that went in, I think that was already game over after, what, 60 minutes, 55 minutes.
It felt like it, even if we, like, it just felt in the final third today, we absolutely just couldn't get anything going right at all. Bailey looked tired, given how electric he's been this season today. It was just like, yeah, I just didn't look at it, really. Watkins running a lot, but it just nothing really coming off. And just it was just everything in the final third was just a bit poor today. I just felt that Tottenham were well on top. And what you're saying about McGinn as well, it was the orangest of orange cards, which is telling you it's enough for a red, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just the thought, like, a lot of Villa fans will think, you know, that's a yellow. And, you know, if you look at the Edison's penalty for City today against Liverpool, then yeah, you could make that argument. And if it was a yellow, you'd say he's a lucky boy. But the fact it's a red is like, well, yeah, I mean, he did go in with a lot of force, and it was a very un-John McGinn thing to do. You know, he's been such a brilliant player for us for so long and someone you can always rely on. And I thought he was our best player today, to be honest, pretty much by head and shoulders above everyone else. And so for him to make a decision like that, you know, Konsa pointing at his head after it, which was enough to say Konsa's showing you.
Konsa knew, didn't he? Konsa was like, you know, he said like, Guinea, like, what the you lost it there, didn't you? Which is like, I think it's a bit rich, because if Konsa used his head a bit more, then maybe he would have made his daft decision earlier in the match. But it is frustrating, and now it means we're without our captain for three very important games with 10 games of the season to go, and in a position where we're already light because McGinn replaced, obviously, Kamara, who is now injured for the entire season. So that means more likely that Timur Ogbonnam is going to be chucked in at the deep end right when it really matters at the sharp end of the season. Big challenge for him. Obviously, he has played a few more games since he's been back. You know, he did start against Ajax. I thought he did okay. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of pressure now on his shoulders to stand up. And who knows? I mean, I'm hoping he can do the business. And
you never know.
Absolutely. And we've said this before, haven't we, Frankie? About opportunities. You know, when opportunities arise, you've got to grab them by the horns, haven't you? And you know, as every Villa fan would be cheering him on and wishing him the very best, because he's a youth team player, and we all want our youth team players to to forge their careers with us, and we want them to be successes in their careers. Mm. And so this is now his moment where he can, you know, take full advantage and try and help us where we need him.
Yeah, exactly that. It's a tough 4 games coming up now, isn't it, before the international break? Well, it's not 4 with the international break, but it's a tough 4 games in a row we've got coming. We've got, Ajax on Thursday night. The atmosphere will be amazing. And I can't wait. I'm going to it. And I think it will, I think that's a good opportunity to bounce back. It's hard, given, it's the crushing disappointment of today. But if we can bounce back solidly with that, West Ham also have to play Thursday night in a game where they're 1-0 behind. So they actually have to really go for it if they want to stay in the Europa League. And then we've got West Ham away 3 days later. Again, their form is all over the place this season, but it's hard to be as optimistic as I have been, knowing McGinn's not there, knowing Kamara's not there. It's a challenging one.
You look at that midfield now, and you see, potentially Robinham, Luiz, and who
could
else?
Tielemans.
Okay, yeah. Well, that sort of gives me a bit more hope, because you're crying out for a bit more experience now, aren't you? Yeah. So Tielemans probably will start, won't he now? But yeah, it's you're right. I mean, today was a sickener. I think that's fair to say, and in many ways, the McGinn sending off just another element of all that, and so yeah. But we have to try and be positive. I mean, we know under Emery we are actually very good at responding well to defeats. We've had blips in the season so far, and we've ridden waves and we've come back. So yeah, we just have to have full faith in the team and Emery to do that, hopefully as quickly as possible on Thursday night against Ajax.
All Villa, No Filler on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram.
Welcome back, everybody. Now it is time for this.
Could George turn me into a modern day Mike Tyson and leave me trying to bite his ear off the next time we meet as things get heated in this, the spicy question? And today, George, I'm liking the look of your ears, actually, mate. I might just have a little nibble on them the next time we meet. I ask you, if you could choose one player ever that you've witnessed at Aston Villa that you'd love to see playing this current team under Unai Emery, who would it be?
Oh, wow. God. So one player that I've seen who I think would thrive in this Emery team. Ooh, that's a tough one.
It's a good one, isn't it? It's good.
It's a good one. I mean, I know I don't have forever to think of this, so I'm just gonna say the name that
I haven't seen you ponder this hard since you've been asked which Edward was king in the year like 1360 in a pub quiz once. I'm sure
that was Edward. That was Edward III, Frankie. I think that's I think what we've been missing, Frankie, all season, it's that player in the final third just off the striker who can kind of unlock defenses, and I'm going to say his name because he was a player that could obviously do this, but I think Jack Grealish in our team, the Jack Grealish that we had in the Championship and in the first couple of seasons in the Premier League, I think he would make a big, big difference to our team. I mean, we saw it, obviously, with Jack Grealish and Watkins had an amazing partnership. Grealish could unlock the defence and Watkins could, finish it off. He would fit in perfectly, wouldn't he? He'd be the player that you'd want, who can kind of like drag players out of position, weave in and out. It wouldn't be the Man City Grealish, the direct kind of, pragmatic Grealish. Yeah. It would be the kind of like flamboyant... the flamboyant Jack Grealish that we knew and loved at Villa Park, for a few seasons ago. I would say he would be the man.
Imagine that front three where you'd have Grealish just off the current Watkins with Leon Bailey in his current form.
Oh,
playing on the right. My goodness.
Yeah, I think that would guarantee top 4 for sure.
I think it definitely would. I definitely. He's the
Because you'd have a lovely combination there of the directness of Bailey, who's also a pretty tricky customer himself, but like direct, quick, pacey, and then the sort of like, you know, sort of magical sort of creeping of Grealish, where he has a bit of pace to him, but also he can kind of like throw a trick in here and there.
And he could play out on the left as well if we needed him to go back there, shift around. He'd be magic, wouldn't he? Oh, breaks my heart just thinking about it. Damn you, City! Damn you!
Once again, taking our players.
Bloody. Oh. But I think that's a good one. I wouldn't mind seeing someone like Bosco Balaban, just to see if Unai Emery
take the heat off Watkins for a bit. Yeah. Go on, Bosco, you can do it.
I'd actually be fascinated to know if Unai Emery could get him scoring goals in his Villa team. Like, just
wow,
played as the second striker, in he comes, Bosco's on.
Like in a sort of sliding doors moment. If Emery was a bit younger was younger in the 90s, and Balaban comes in, could Emery change time and make Balaban the striker we all hoped he would be? And you know, you'd be proud to wear that Balaban shirt that you still have.
I still have. Because Grealish was the one who just struck me in my mind immediately. I was like, yeah, it's 100% him. But I was trying to think sort of outside the box a little bit. And it was like, obviously, like Paul McGrath is like the best defender we've probably ever had. One of the best defenders ever.
But I'm trying to think of players that would work in this, particularly in this Emery team. I'm trying to think of like really gifted fullbacks we've had. Because obviously, you know, Emery likes to play with his fullbacks. I'm going to think, is there a fullback that would have been particularly good under Emery?
Wilfred Boomer would have been good.
Interesting.
Do you remember that season? Was he right back, I think, Boomer?
Sort of I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Steve Staunton.
Staunton. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Staunton might have been interesting.
I think right back is the area, and this is not to get at Matty Cash, but it's the area. If I was to say, where does it seem most obvious Villa could probably improve? I hate saying this because I do like Cash and I do rate him, but I do think there's room for improvement in that particular role.
Well, I couldn't help but notice, Frank, I don't know if you saw the same as well, but that's where Spurs were attacking a lot of the game. It was down that our right-hand side.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that was a decision made. I mean, Son, you know, he does play there as well on the left. So, you know, you can understand why it was going through him as well. But equally, perhaps they looked at it and thought, well, maybe we can get at the right. But yes, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of any right-sided defenders we've had.
I think Boomer. I'm sure he was. He's a slightly unheralded, actually.
Given how good
he actually was.
Yeah, and you know, obviously, if it wasn't for that awful injury he picked up in pre-season that time. Yeah.
I was at that game. I remember that happening.
Yeah, awful, wasn't it? So, was that a pre-season game, or was that early stages of like a European Cup? Like, not the European Cup, but a European Cup.
I vaguely think it was a European competition.
Yeah, I think it might have been.
I think it was, yeah. I remember I was at the top of the Trinity looking down, and I remember, oh God, awful. But but maybe someone like a Luke Nillis would have been, you know, again, another player we lost to a terrible
maverick.
Injury.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And him as that second striker, or maybe could play as the striker. And again, like that dynamic of player that I think Zaniolo's supposed to be that, but it's not
Paul,
really.
Paul Merson?
Essentially, it doesn't work. Merson would be good. God, yeah, he'd be good. God, this is Gareth Barry.
Ginola.
Yeah, Ginola. I think Jack Grealish is the obvious answer.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But I think that if I was to try and think outside the box, I think Paul McGrath, obviously, but like, where is it that I think Villa could be a bit stronger? And it's probably in that fullback area.
Yeah.
And obviously backup striker and backup keepers. Well, I haven't seen Joe Gauchy really yet, but backup striker we could improve. But just that fullback area. So maybe like a...
Boomer is a left field choice, but I like it.
Maybe a Stevie Staunton, even though he's a left back, and that's probably not where we're at our weakest. But
Ulysses De La Cruz.
Yeah. There's a few that I could come in here, like Milner could fit in here. at his peak for us as centre midfield. He was brilliant. He was a bit of a John McGinn of his time, really, wasn't he?
Yeah, very much so.
Gareth Barry as well. Gareth Barry, another guy who could play at fullback as well. Paul McGrath. God, there's so many. Dwight York, Dean Saunders, David Atkinson, Kevin Richardson.
But out of interest, I mean, you talk about strikers that could thrive under Emery. I honestly think I don't think he could do better than Watkins. Genuinely, I think Watkins is like a proper Emery striker in my mind. I mean, would Benteke have been as prolific under Emery? I'm not entirely sure he would be.
I feel like Benteke was he was ball into feet. He'd hold it up amazingly well.
Yeah, he wouldn't run the channels. You know,
no, it wasn't really.
He'd play between the posts, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
You know, receive the ball either in the box or just outside, and then hold it up for others to get involved or shoot himself, which he was obviously very good at. But I don't know whether he would have thrived in an Emery. Because Emery kind of likes all the players to contribute and be quite industrious.
Yeah.
Benteke was never really that, from what I can remember.
He was fantastic for us.
I mean, what a goal scorer he was.
He'd probably have to adapt his game, I think. I think he had the talent to do it. It's weird what happened to his career after that, Villa. But yeah, I think you're right about Watkins. I mean, to be honest, of all the strikers I've ever seen at Villa, he's probably like the perfect striker for Emery. I mean, that said, I mean, Dwight York would be something else under Emery.
I bet
he'd hit 20 a season under Emery.
Yeah, because York would run the channels as well. York had a kind of it all, didn't he? He could finish and he would work hard and
And I'd love it when he'd pull his collar up. You know, yeah, wearing a collar shirt, and you were like, he was the coolest man ever, you know.
All of them were quite oversized back then, but it was a sort of kind of oversized collar up shirt, and it would be kind of tucked in, but not really. It would sort of be sort of semi tucked in.
Yeah,
one sock rolled up, one sock rolled down.
Yeah,
but what a player he was. Anyway, I still maintain Greek. For me, I think the player we are missing is someone that can unlock defences. We've struggled with that kind of all season, I think. I think Buendia would have probably played that role if he wasn't injured all season and probably been very good at it. But
and do you know what my theory on Buendia is? In pre-season, he was really, really hot. He was really good.
He was.
And I wonder if he might have been on course for a bit of a Bailey season.
Yeah.
That he would have got to an even higher level than I think we anticipated. Because I thought he actually played really well during the great run of last season.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think given that Zaniolo's not been an adequate replacement for him, really, I think Zaniolo can't play centrally. That's my theory. And I think he's a right midfielder and we're stacked in that position. And it just feels to me like he's too slow on the ball in centrally. So, yeah, that's where I am. But yeah, I think you're right. I think player can unlock things and, you know, a pickpocket, but and also maybe a right back. So Boomer and Grealish, they're coming in, but there's probably people screaming now, being like, Boomer, what are you fucking on, like, you idiots?
Like those FIFA card reveals where you're like, you're like looking at it as they're coming up. You're like, is Wilfred Boomer? You're like, yes, get in, get in. It's like a bronze player. You're like, get in.
Yeah, but imagine like Powell with Paul McGrath and Contract Wright. My goodness. I'm cooking a big, lovely Pau Torres paella thinking about this.
What I would say, the one positive, I mean, there are very few positives, but the fact that Torres got through that entire game uninjured is a plus. I wonder, you know, that maybe obviously Longley and Torres are both left-footed, you know, that would that have impeded us in some way? Maybe it was a bit lopsided. I don't know. I'm just sort of picking holes now in everything that I can. But anyway, no, on a positive note, it was great to see Pau Torres play again, and I'm sure he will continue that. Okay, thank you everybody for listening. I've been your host, George Zielinski. Frankie, see you later.
Catch a bit, George. I'm very impressed with your answer, and therefore I will not be biting your ear off the next time we meet.
That's very kind. Thank you, Frankie. I could do with both my ears. Thank you very much. To continue the podcast, if nothing else. But it is goodbye from me. We will be back again soon, but until then, Come on, Super Aston Villa.